The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiou.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. All of us these days, and children in particular, are constantly bombarded by the image-centric media to look a certain way, be a certain way, act a certain way, and so on and so on. So do you wonder why kids and adults alike often suffer from low esteem and feel not quite good enough? My guest, Dr. Kelly Flanagan, will share his experience and expertise emphasizing how to discover the relevance of why you are important and the necessity to understand your purpose and passion. Kelly is a licensed clinical psychologist, writer, and blogger. He blogs regularly about marriage, parenting, community, and personal growth at drkellyflanagan.com. Kelly is married, has three children, and enjoys learning from them on how to be a kid again, and it is truly my pleasure to have him with us today. Kelly, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So, in my experience, children tend to assign blame to themselves for certain events that happen in life, some of which may be within their control, others may be totally outside of their control. Mm-hmm. They get a bad grade. The end result is my parents don't love me. Parents get divorced. They think it's their fault. There is a need to separate and disconnect events that happen, either intrinsic or extrinsic, disconnecting worth from performance, isn't there?
You know, absolutely. And I think there's a couple issues tied up in that, and I think you're getting at something that's very important, which is, you know, for children, it is feeling out of control is a lot scarier than feeling at fault. And so one of the ways that our kids will try to maintain a sense of control, if something's going wrong, the natural tendency is to say, well, I can have control over this if I take the blame and try to do something different with it. So I think there can be a kind of a natural tendency within our kids to take the blame when things feel a little bit out of control. And then there is that kind of merging that starts to happen with, you know, if I did something wrong, if I made a mistake, if I'm at fault, then I am something wrong, then I am a mistake, then I am a failure. And that's a distinction that we have to try really hard to help our kids to make so they don't merge those two.
And we have a very timely email, which I received early this morning. Obviously, the listener that I would refer to by first initial K certainly had read about the upcoming show, and I thank her for sending this. And this is a very poignant email that really speaks not only to the children, but the parents as well. Mm-hmm. Kay says, any tips on helping my husband really understand how his constant criticism is damaging his relationship with our 11-year-old son, who is our only? He has narcissistic traits, a narcissistic father and borderline mother and sister, but he has finally heard my request for empathy and stopped hearing me blaming him. He has really improved how he treats our son. However, our son's self-esteem has been so damaged, and he says he does not trust his dad to talk to him. Any help? I want to respect boundaries and would love some suggestions. Thank you, Kay, for this question. And for our listeners, let's just quickly define the street version of what a narcissist is. This is a person, my lay understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is an individual who does everything right, cannot accept any criticism for anything, and anything bad that happens is somebody else's fault. So they assign blame to everyone but themselves.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the typical understanding of what it means to have a kind of a clinical level of narcissism. In fact, most of the diagnostic criteria actually kind of map onto what you just said pretty well. So I think you did a fantastic job of defining it.
Thank you.
And I think one thing I really appreciate the question too from Kay. I think it's a very rich question, and there's a lot going on in that question. And I think one thing that first of all I think is important to remember. Invariably, when there's a narcissistic personality happening, while it appears that on the surface the individual is entirely confident, and like you said, doesn't like to be wrong, and so on and so forth, usually narcissism actually comes out of a deep sense of unworthiness. Most of life becomes about kind of proving or keeping up a front of worth, while deep down there really isn't much of a sense of self-esteem. And so oftentimes I find it helpful when dealing with someone who is presenting more narcissistically to remember that, to see that there is something in them that is scared of being discovered, scared of being understood, and that oftentimes it can help to relate to the person in that way. The problem when there is that kind of that carried and hidden sense of unworthiness is that in order to keep it buried, a person will try to transfer it to other people. So in other words, if I kind of feel pretty crummy underneath, one of the things I'll do is try to make everyone else around me feel even crummier, so that I can feel better about myself. And I don't think usually that's a conscious process. I think that's usually something that's happening unconsciously. But it happens nonetheless, and it sounds like in this, unfortunate situation, the person took the brunt of that criticism was this gentleman's 11-year-old son. So there's some repair work to do there, no doubt.
So the how do we get the son to and the father? The father obviously has made good steps in changing, being more aware of his own behavior and the impact of his behavior.
Right.
But still here you have an 11-year-old boy who, and most young boys look at their dads as what they want to be when they grow up.
Yep.
So how do you repair that broken trust? Because clearly Kay tells us that her son does not trust to talk to his dad because he does not feel that either he will be heard or he doesn't feel safe.
Right. Yeah, and I really like what Kay said at the end of the email about wanting to respect boundaries.
Right.
Because there's something actually pretty healthy that her son's doing in setting those boundaries right now and saying, this doesn't get better overnight. 11 years, of dealing with a lot of criticism, that takes some time to fix. And I think typically what will happen in this situation is, and I do give Dad a lot of credit for, sounds like being able to kind of finally say, I know I need to change my ways here. I think that, typically what will happen then, though, is there's an urge to kind of have a flight into health. Like, okay, I know I've messed up, and so I'm going to start giving empathy, so let's put this all behind us as quickly as we can. Because what's happening is that Dad is having to face some of his own failures as a father, and that can feel really uncomfortable. And so there's an urge to rush past that. So one of the most important things is patience and time and allowing her son to have the space to set boundaries and having that be okay with Dad. I think that's one of the ways Dad can really affirm his son right now is saying, I know I've messed up, and you've kind of earned the right to not trust me for now. And so one of the ways I'm going to earn your trust back is by letting you not trust me, actually, and understanding that that's okay for now. And then, you know, of course, I'm a therapist, so I would always, in this situation, recommend that, in this case, probably her son be in therapy and working through some of the beliefs he's taken on about himself in the midst of this relationship. And also, my guess is, you know, Dad has a long road ahead of him, and it probably wouldn't hurt for him to be doing some of his own work, too.
Exactly. So if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is that the worst thing that Dad can do is kind of poo-poo the whole situation and pretend that it's nothing important and, you know, it's the kid's fault or a misunderstanding or maybe accept the blame as he seems to be doing. Good credit goes to him. But thinking that, you know, yeah, okay, I accepted the blame, so let's just kiss and make up, so to speak.
Yeah, go ahead.
It takes a long time to mess something up. You can't expect it to be rebuilt overnight.
You're exactly right. You know, there is the temptation to say, okay, I messed up, in order to fix it quickly and move past it, just because it's too uncomfortable to exist in that place of disappointment. And so I think this father can really give a huge gift to his son by saying, you know, I'm going to learn to do that. I'm going to learn to have disappointed you and to understand that has an impact on you, and that impact is going to be something that plays out over time. And I'm going to learn how to say sorry from now on. I'm going to learn how to take responsibility, and that's the way that I build trust with you over time. But yeah, 11 years is a long time, and it doesn't get better overnight. And if there's any urge to kind of rush to health, I think that just will end up doing more damage in the long term.
Yeah, backfiring.
Yep.
I know you mentioned it early on, but it it bears repeating because it's a very important element, and that is that in your words, nothing you do can make us love you any more or any less. So
yes.
There has to be that conscious disconnect that if you mess up, you don't think that I'm going to love you. Or if you are, you know, a bad person, but if you have traits that are not necessarily good, by doing one good thing does not erase everything else.
Absolutely. That's a phrase that I actually borrowed from. We have some friends who they will say that actually every night to each of their kids at bedtime. There's nothing you can do to make us love you any more or any less. And I really like that because I think a lot of times we communicate the less part of it to our kids. You know, there's nothing that you can do to make us love you any less. But I think the more part is really critical. Because if you don't say the more part, what it leaves hanging out there is, but you know what, if you get into an Ivy League school, we'll really be proud of you, you know. And if you make the varsity basketball team as a sophomore, we'll really be excited. And what you're communicating is that our love is big enough that there's no room for it to get any bigger, and there's no way for you to reduce it. And I think, you know, and this probably applies to Kay's question, I think it's important to give our kids permission to call us out when we're not living that. Because it's one thing to say it, you know, at bedtime when you're like, you've almost got them into bed and you're about to go watch some TV or enjoy yourself for a change, you know. And,
yep.
And it's one thing to say it in that situation. It's another thing when everyone's at the dinner table and no one can sit still and the kids are upset and crying. And then it's okay for, you know, you to say, hey, in those situations when I'm not living out what I say at bedtime, let me know. And I will try to do a better job of that. And in that way, you kind of model for the kids that not only is it true of them, but you have enough sense of worth to say, you can tell me I'm making mistakes and I'm not so devastated by it that I can't hear that. I actually can hear that and I don't get that merged with my sense of worth.
And at the same time, you're teaching by example. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Efesiou. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epiciu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epiciu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epiciu. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. Please visit him on his website, drkellyflanagan.com. His Facebook page is Dr. Kelly Flanagan, and follow him on Twitter at Dr. Kelly Flanagan. For information on this program, speaking engagements, and other activities, please visit my website, chrisfsu.com, or straightupwithchris.com. My Facebook page is Chris Epiciu, and on Twitter, I'm Chief Daddy Officer. So we had a very fruitful segment, largely answering a question by one of our listeners, Kay, who had an incredibly appropriate question. I am sure she has received an appropriate answer. Kelly, you said a number of different things, and I can relate to them because in my experience of raising my daughter as a single dad, there were an awful lot of things that happened to me or happened to somebody else within the family unit that kind of, mm-hmm. you know, of course, if you're at the tail end, it's almost like the goal is to, you know, shoot the ball into your net. So you're constantly there catching. And you said something about narcissists who in order to make themselves feel better about themselves, they make others feel worse, and that is such a it's a terrible thing in my mind, a very demeaning thing to want to pay a compliment to someone. But the only way you can do that is by putting them down.
Right.
And I had a former brother-in-law who used to do that as part of his joking, apparently.
Right.
And I used to refer to him as him having the Don Rickles sense of humor, that the only way he can be funny is to undercut someone.
Yep.
You also mentioned something about the love that parents have for children, and nothing you can do will make us love you more or love you less. Now,
right.
there are times where children will hear that, but not necessarily internalize it. And I bring up an example that happened to me almost 20 years ago. My ex-wife and I had divorced. I'm raising my daughter as a single dad. At some point, I started dating again. Mm-hmm. And while there was discretion and all of that, she started, because she was always daddy's girl and very, very close to me, obviously, she started feeling as though my attention to this other person is diminishing attention and, most importantly, love from her.
Right.
And of course, you can tell her that, you know, this is your daddy cannot possibly love you anymore, and so on and so forth. But oftentimes, because kids see and understand things better in pictures, I think that parents ought to kind of paint that picture that make them their child understand that better. And here's the picture I painted, and it could have been, you know, I'm no Picasso here, but you know, I did my best. I asked her this. I said, honey, you know, I know you love me. Do you love me? Yes, daddy, I love you. Can you love me anymore? No, I love you very much. You know, you're my everything. Great. How about your friend? Do you love your friend? Yes, I do. Well, when you love your friend, do you love me any less? No. And she was almost offended that I asked the question.
Yeah.
I said, well,
you don't, right.
So why do you worry that I will be loving you less just because I'm with another person? And that, to a very large degree, perhaps more so than anybody else, than anything else, served as the catalyst to kind of erase that that question mark from her mind once and for all.
Yep. Yep. That's a great example. I'm going to borrow it. I'm going to use it in my practice.
Please do.
You know, anything that can kind of tap in for the person who's doubting, tap into their experiential sense of, oh yeah, when I love one thing, it doesn't diminish my love for another thing. Sometimes, in fact, it even expands, you know, my love for another thing. That is really, like you said, instead of getting at kind of theoretical things, it's like, let's get you connected with an experience in which this is true for you, and then you'll be able to trust that inside of me, the same is also true.
Exactly.
And I think that's brilliant. You said your brother-in-law with a sense of humor?
Yes.
You know, a lot of times what's happening there, particularly, with the narcissism, is this idea that we're all on a hierarchy, and the higher we are on some hierarchy, the more worthy we are, the more lovable we are, and so on. And I think kids naturally, you know, I think this is kind of a natural way of thinking about things, you know. So when a kid is experiencing us giving our time and attention and energy to something besides them, I think they kind of naturally go into that mode of, where do I fit on mom and dad's hierarchy? And in what we're trying to communicate to them is that our love isn't experienced on a hierarchy. It's a level playing field on which everyone can exist and everyone can receive an equal kind of love from me. Not the same love, different, you know, we love people differently in different ways and in action differently, but the level of my love for you does not differ. There is no hierarchy in how much I care for you. But it does take active, intentional work to help our kids understand that we are not constantly rating people and deciding who we love the most. And that's just a really counterintuitive thing, I think, as a human being, and it's something that takes some time to unlearn.
Very true.
I think I think a lot of your listeners are working people. Some of them probably in dual earner families, and this problem is inherent in dual earner in any family where people are working outside of the home, but particularly in dual earner families where, immediately the day starts with mom and dad are going off to a job, and is that job more important than me? Do they love that job more than they love me? And so I think those kinds of things are questions that are in the minds of children all the time, regardless of even whether or not they have siblings that are competing for attention or whatever. I think it's just kind of inherent in life. We can't give our kids all of our attention, and so they're going to start to wonder, how do I measure up compared to everything else that is getting mom and dad's attention?
Exactly. And in my experience, the best way to show them how they measure up is to vote with your feet. And if you are there, you're present, and if you cannot be present physically, because clearly there are people who travel a lot, and I was one of them.
Right.
There are people who are in the military, and they're deployed, and that's... Those are long spaces of separation from a loved one and all the worry that goes with that. There are ways, using technology, using emotional connection, mm-hmm. that you can be emotionally present in your child's life. And when they feel you there, they mm-hmm. if they see you and feel you, it's great. But yep. when they feel you there, in my experience, it surpasses and outdoes almost any impediment, and there is nothing more shameful than to mm-hmm. be sitting on the same couch and watching television and be emotionally disconnected.
Absolutely. I mean, you're getting it at both sides of it, that when you're together, it's so important to be together, right? To have your attention fully there, to be present. It's so easy, particularly with all the technology works both ways, right? When you're together, the technology can be a hindrance. It can be a distraction.
Exactly. Yep.
And then when you're away, it can actually help to foster a sense of connection. You know, I'm actually looking at it right now on a bookshelf in my office. I have a stack of drawings, pictures, and kind of art projects that my middle child has given me. And he'll give these to me probably once a month and say, "Take this. Can you take this to your office?" And I've resolved to never throw them away. I can't hang them all up in my office, but I'm never going to throw them away, because when he comes to my office, I want him to see those and to know that Daddy has taken a part of him to work with him, you know, and that it's important to me. There's a principle in child development called object permanence. And what object permanence is that when you when you're a baby, when you're first born, and if a parent were to show you, say, a red ball that you were interested in, and then they hid that red ball behind their back, as a newborn baby, you wouldn't know that ball exists anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of time in infancy, you develop this thing called object permanence, which means if they show you the red ball and they put it behind their back, you know it's still back there. The object
right.
is still in reality, and so you go looking for it. And I think there's something about finding a way to communicate to our kids when we're away from them, that they're still a permanent object in our minds, that we're still looking for them, that we're still thinking about them. So a text in the middle of the day, you know, that says, "I know you've got your, you know, your math test coming up at 1 this afternoon. Good luck." I think that does an awful lot, because we can't be with our kids all the time, but we can show them that they're with us in our minds, in our hearts, and we're thinking about them.
And I am here to tell you that when your children grow up, they will do the same thing to you, mm-hmm. Kelly, because... that little girl that I raised from the age of 7, she's now 26. She's a very successful business person in her own right.
Good
and,
for her.
Yes, and she and I share war stories, you know, business stories, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And she consults me regularly. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, I will share certain things that happen at my work as well. When she knows that I have a difficult presentation or something that she knows that it is above the norm,
yep.
I will receive a text from her and saying, "I'm thinking of you, Dad. You're going to do great."
Oh, and that's really cool.
It is. And that alone kind of lifts you off the floor several feet.
Mm.
And it does not matter what you have to face. You're going to face it with a smile on your face. And regardless of what the outcome is, what you're going to end up with is going to be something infinitely better. Let's talk more about that. And what I want to get into the other side of the break is the need to disconnect a person's worth from a person's appearance. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household.
Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. Please visit his website at drkellyflanagan.com. His Facebook page is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. And follow him on Twitter at Dr. Kelly Flanagan. Great two segments up to now. We discussed a whole lot of very interesting things. Kelly, I want you to enlighten us from a clinical standpoint that image, whether that is looking a certain way, acting a certain way, behaving a certain way, that your appearance, whether that is physical and or otherwise, your appearance does not define you. So it isn't your worth, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I like to qualify this kind of discussion first with saying that I do think that there are plenty of people in the world who, like a really authentic expression of who they are, involves cultivation of beauty in people. So, you know, clothing designers, hairstylists, these are folks who really enjoy what they do, and I think they're doing they're fulfilling a wonderful calling. I think that's it's a beautiful thing. So I don't want to disparage this idea that that beauty is a bad thing. But I do think, you know, as you said, that we want to find a way to help our children understand, and we are fighting an uphill battle in this culture, that their appearance is uncorrelated with their worth as a person. And so, you know, one of the things that I think this just kind of happens spontaneously, but it's become a ritual for my daughter and I. When I put her to bed at night, I say, "Are you beautiful on the outside?" And her answer is yes. And then I say, "And where are you the most beautiful?" And she says, "On the inside." And so what I'm trying to affirm there is that, you know, you are beautiful on the outside. And yet, can we put that aside? Can we acknowledge that beauty is really something that comes from internally, from who you are as a person, not how you look as a body? And I think, again, that we're really fighting an uphill battle in our culture to instill that in our kids.
Indeed. And I think that dovetails to the importance of teaching your child and yourself that you're important, you matter, you've got a role to play, and that you're an intricate part of our family unit, and our family does not function the same way without you in it.
Absolutely. I think all of this is connected, you know, because I think a lot of times people assume that when we start talking about, you know, affirming children's unconditional worth, that they think we mean, well, then what, we don't have them kind of be responsible for things. We don't set limits. We don't discipline. And all of that actually highlights the original problem, which is the assumption that worth is tied to what a person does. And so once we've kind of gotten past that, we can start to talk about what do you mean to our family? Who are you? What role do you have to play here? And right there in the family, beginning to give the child a sense that, like, the world needs you. You're valuable in this world. You have something to do in this world. You're here for a reason. And our job is to try to help you discover that to whatever extent we can. And hopefully we do a good job of that, but we might not. And then it's your job to correct us, you know? And so that's something that I very much believe in, is I hope that each of my kids, comes away from our family with a sense of, you know, I was needed there. The family functioned because I was an important part of that. So that's something that we try to instill.
Absolutely. We have a question from one of our listeners, actually two questions now. Let's take this one from Andrew in Los Angeles, and it says, Dr. Flanagan, what are the best ways to help build self-worth in your child?
Well, you know, that is a huge, great question. And you said this caller's name is Andrew?
Andrew from Los Angeles. Yep.
Andrew, you know, you and I could we could go out and have a couple of drinks over that question. I'm gonna mention a couple of a few ideas here that are just kind of the tip of the iceberg, and then we can go from there. I think, you know, I mentioned earlier the friends who say nothing you can do can make us love you more or any less. They say that at bedtime every night. I think rituals are really important in, you know, and again, you know, when I put my daughter to bed at night, were you the most beautiful on the inside? You know, when we do something like that, when we do something repetitively, routinely, it begins to work its way kind of down from our head and more into our hearts. And so I think having things that we say ritualistically that we are doing regularly with our kids, I think that's huge. Words make a difference, and the right words said often enough and in a very intentional way, not just flippantly but intentionally, I think that makes a big difference. So that's one. I think two would be, it is, you know, we are not talking about not disciplining our kids, not setting boundaries and limits, but I think finding a way to engage in disciplining and boundary setting without anger, without a sense of condemnation, but in the midst of communicating, you know, I love who you are, but what you're doing isn't working for me right now, then I think that is one of those experiential moments in which a kid really starts to get it, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm all right, but I'm going to have to change what I'm doing here. So that's two. I think we mentioned it earlier with Kay's letter or Kay's question. So important as parents that we are working on developing our own sense of worth. If we haven't developed a more solid sense of who we are and our worthiness, then, you know, that doubt in ourselves is going to spill out all over the place. I know we used an extreme example in the letter where there's this 11-year-old son who's been really hurt by his dad, but I do it all the time. You know, my own sense of insecurities get spilled out on my kids, and so we have a duty to them to be working on ourselves, I think. And then finally, I know I'm kind of going long here. Stop me if you need to. I think the other thing that I would say is that our kids are going to encounter difficult situations. That's okay. You know, they're going to experience situations where they're shamed, where they're told they're not good enough, whether it's on the playground or from other adults or teachers or even from us at times when we kind of mess up. And I don't think it's a matter of protecting them from that. I think it's a matter of helping them learn how to be resilient in the face of that, and learning how they can respond to those situations in a way that they can affirm their own worth in the midst of them.
Absolutely. And again, to echo your comment earlier about, you know, parents need to keep on working on themselves. You know, there's no such thing as a perfect parent.
Right.
There is no training school or owner's manual for parents or children. But
yep.
Parents, for better or worse, made the choice to have a child, and that choice comes with a responsibility. And that responsibility says that I need to do the best I know how, but to educate, not in the academic word, but in the life sense of the meaning of the word, educate this child. And if that means, or when that means, that I too need to be educated, then so be it. I'm going to go back to school, whatever that school happens to be. So it's just like learning, it's a never-ending kind of thing. So one has to consistently and constantly do that. Another timely question that comes from Dorothy from Jupiter, Florida. Dorothy says, Dr. Flanagan, I have a 9-year-old daughter and I'm alarmed at her concern over image, particularly around her friends. Mm-hmm. With all that she sees in the media, how can I help her see that looks are not what make a person?
Right. Well, Dorothy, I think the first thing I would say is she's right on time. You know, 9 years old, 10 years old, that's when it starts. You know, it's around that time that our kids are developing a sense of kind of social consciousness. They're becoming aware that they can look at other people and make judgments and critique them, and so they're becoming aware that other people can do that to them as well. And so it's actually pretty age appropriate for your daughter at this point to be starting to get concerned about image. Nothing wrong with that at all. And like I said earlier, particularly in our culture, it's probably going to happen as early as possible now, as early as a kid can possibly conceive that that's an issue. They're probably going to be doing it. But I do think, I wouldn't be alarmed, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I would say that it's an important time. It's an important time to get in early, begin to have these discussions with her. My wife is actually a child psychologist, and I think she does a beautiful job of asking our kids questions and finding out what are they thinking, you know, and interacting with that. Like, I'm much more likely to want to go in and say, well, this is why I think you shouldn't be concerned about what your friends think. But she does a great job of saying, so what's it like when, you know, so-and-so comes to school in that outfit? Like, how do you feel about that? And, you know, how could you deal with that if it's starting to bother you during the day? You know, so kind of letting our kids begin to develop their own strategies for dealing with that and letting them come to their own decisions that I don't want image to be as important as everybody's making it.
Correct. And eventually they do come to that decision because unfortunately, it happens a little bit later in life, so they do not save themselves from that anguish that they enter in ninth year of age till whichever year of age. But then they get their legs under them, if you will, and they become far more self-secure, and they say, well, you know, not only do I not think that I need to follow people, but I'm going to set my own image and let others follow me.
Absolutely. Who are you? What do you want to look like? And the people that are still around when you've established that, those will be the good people to hang out with. Image is one of those things. I think you made a great point there, Chris, that, you know, it's one of those things that we don't have an option in this. We all of us come to some point where physically, our image isn't our choice anymore, right? And whether it happens later in life, you know, in our elder years or earlier, we're going to have to decide that we are more than what our body and our appearance does for us. And so trying to help a kid begin to decide they're going to do that earlier and not spend their life in kind of the illusion that their image is everything, I think you're just kind of helping them learn the lesson as quickly as possible.
Indeed. I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to take your answer on the other side of the break. The question is, we as parents do our best and try to get our kids get it, whatever that get it is, you know, understand what it is that we are trying to transfer to them in terms of knowledge, wisdom, information, whatever it might be. Sometimes the kids don't get it, or don't get it early enough, soon enough. Don't get it in time, perhaps the time that we assign to this whole task, saying, well, they should have gotten it in up to now. How does it make parents feel? Many parents seem tend to feel like they have failed because, well, if you haven't succeeded, you then must have failed.
Right.
I'd be very interested to hear your take on that as soon as we come back from a short break. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
News, opinion,
passion. Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epiciu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epiciu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epiciu. My guest is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. Please visit his website at drkellyflanagan.com. His Facebook page is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. And on Twitter, he is Dr. Kelly Flanagan. So I asked Dr. Flanagan just before we went on break, for those of us who do our damnedest to teach our kids whatever it is that we need to teach them, and we expect that by this time, after we have said it a million times, and of course, you know, nobody has said anything a million times, but there, I know of no parent who has not used that number as the number of times that they have said something to their children, that that child should have gotten it by now, and whatever direction, suggestion, information we have given to that child should have been enacted, and the child should have owned it. But the child hasn't. And so that makes me, the father, you, the mother, feel like failure. Should we?
Right. It's a great question. You know, there's an irony here that we many of us badly want our kids to understand their worth, but that we can set it up as another game that they can get right or wrong, right?
Right.
So I really want you to understand your worth, and darn it, you're not. So you're failing me. And that's an easy temptation, and it's easy to turn on ourselves too, right? Like, I want them to understand their worth, and if I'm not getting that across, then I'm a failure as a parent, and I'm not worthy. And those are, you know, that's an easy temptation to get into. And, you know, I think when I work with parents, I emphasize this because if you feel like your success as a parent is dependent upon them getting this, you're going to fall into a few different traps. If you feel guilty that they're not getting it, for some reason, then you might be likely to quit expecting things from them, quit disciplining, and so on. You'll feel like you've done something wrong, and so you'll try to make up for it by making life as kind of, quote, easy as possible on them. Or you might become controlling and really try to drill it into them in various ways, and of course that will be counterproductive. And so really, you know, the the sense of worth that you're trying to communicate to your kids can't just be a lesson, but it's got to be actually something that you're living out. And when you're messing it up, as we said before, it's okay to demonstrate, to model for them that sense of unconditional worth and say, yeah, I'm messing up a little bit, and I apologize for that. I sometimes joke that I try really hard for my kids to know their worth, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to get it completely because they're human. And so I'm waiting for the day that, you know, one of my kids comes to me and says, "Dad, I want to go to a therapist and I need to talk about kind of what you've messed up." And okay, let's go. You know, I'm sure that day's coming. There's just too much going on in a kid's life for them to get it perfectly every time. And so we need to give ourselves some grace on that.
Absolutely. So you talk about passion and purpose, and passion being your purpose. Passion, yes, in my mind, is the fuel that makes the engine of life run.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Once we've done some work to kind of establish our sense of worth, and we don't feel like we've got to do, you know, A, B, or C in order to prove it, then I think we're really freed up to say, like, and sometimes, and the folks that I work with, it's this really startling thing, like, really, like, I just get to do what I want? Like, I obviously have to pay the bills, and I've got, you know, a family to support, but within those parameters, like, I get to do what I want? Yeah, yeah, you don't have anything to prove. You get to be who you want. And when that starts to happen, you know, you hear people say things like, well, you know, to be honest with you, when I was a kid, I decorated my room in reptile wallpaper. And and I have been fascinated with lizards. And so people, like, they go back and they decide to start working at a zoo. Like, and they do these crazy things and they love their job. And so they're freed up to kind of to do in the world the thing that really kind of has been in their hearts from the beginning. And that probably is about as exciting as it gets for me as a therapist, is when I see that kind of thing starting to happen. So as a parent, the idea is, yeah, I hope that my kids can start to get a sense of that and get that early so that they're not, you know, at 45, 50, having to dismantle an awful lot in order to go back and do something different. So that's my hope for them.
And that's entirely true, and we don't have the time to get deeper into that, but I can tell you I have seen so many examples, and one that I will share with you, my wife's granddaughter, our uh-huh. granddaughter now, she is 9 years old, one of the most brilliant children I have ever seen, loves lizards. No one in the family likes them, but loves lizards. As a matter of fact, in the summertime, she was babysitting some kind of reptile, because it needed a home from school during the summer. So, you know, she was providing foster care services.
Yep.
This girl, at age 7, 2 years ago, voiced her opinion that what I want to do when I grow up is become a paleontologist.
That's brilliant.
Yep. And you say, well, paleontology doesn't necessarily deal with lizards, but it deals with an awful lot of dirt, because in paleontologists, and most importantly, an Egyptologist, she wants to be. And so it deals with dirt, it deals with digging up stuff and so on and so forth. And she is certainly passionate about it. And you can tell that whatever it is that she becomes when she is an adult, she will become nothing she is not passionate about. And I love that about children these days, because when I was growing up, and I'm 56, those that are of my age group and probably older, we tended to march to the tune set to us by our parents. Mm. And when that walk became uncomfortable, or when it became unbearable, then most of us found a different path. Yep. But to have a child say, this is what I want to be, and have the family support to allow them to get there, it's absolutely the best of all worlds.
No question. Yeah.
About a minute left. This show has gone by far too fast. Tell me about boundaries. Nobody can exist without boundaries, and children don't do well without boundaries.
Right. Right. Boy, that in a minute. Yeah. Boundaries is it's a huge question. It's a huge issue. I would affirm what you just said, which is children, not only do they need boundaries, they want boundaries. The world feels chaotic and out of control if they don't have some boundaries. Now, given a long enough period of time without them, they get a little bit adapted and adjusted to a world that's out of control, and they can really begin to resist them. But consistent, regular boundaries for our kids are so important. As I said earlier, setting those boundaries without anger, without condemnation, without a sense of shaming the kid is really important. And when we set boundaries, as much as possible, what we want to emphasize is that this boundary is not about necessarily controlling you, because the kids don't have to get too old before they start to realize, actually, you can't control me. You know,
yep.
I can say, go to your bedroom, and they could say, well, no. So we aren't setting out to control our children. We're setting out to say, listen, you have choices, and some of those choices within our home will work better than others. And when you make a choice like this, I'm setting a boundary for myself, and I'm saying, I can't support that. I can't, you know, and so there are going to be some consequences for that. But we want them to have a sense of a freedom of choice within that, and an awareness that they have to make good decisions, and that when they don't, you know, certain things happen. But
I'm going to have to.
Yep.
I'm going to have to ask you to come back at another show to go on deeper into that.
I would love to.
We're out of time. I thank you so much for your time and expertise and easy style to our listeners. And truly, I hope that you are. You consider coming back at some future point.
Chris, I'd love to. This has been a ton of fun. Thank you.
Thank you. So please join me next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. We'll talk more next week. I'm Chris Efesiou. Thank you for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Efesiou, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.